Books on Tape presents We Two, Victoria and Albert, Rulers, Partners, Rivals, by Gillian Gill, read by Rosalind Landor. A cat may look at a king. Old English proverb. Prelude to a Marriage. Windsor Castle, October 10th, 1839. All afternoon, Queen Victoria had been expecting the arrival of her cousin Albert, and she was getting edgier by the minute. Louis XIV had never had to wait, yet here she was, monarch to an empire that put the Sun King's France to shame, cooling her heels until some third-rank German princes arrived and she could go in for dinner. As all the courts of Europe knew, Albert of Saxe-Coburg and Gotha, dutifully chaperoned by his elder brother Ernest, was coming to Windsor so that the Queen of Great Britain and Ireland could look him over and decide if she wanted to marry him. How dare that young man be late? Victoria had in fact been waiting for her Coburg cousins for more than a week, and she was no longer accustomed to interference with her schedule. People nowadays waited for her, and she for her part made a point of being punctual. It was true that her initial invitation to the Coburg cousins had been less than gracious, and then, at the last minute, she had written asking them not to come until after the September meeting of her Privy Council. This request was a shade peremptory, perhaps, but more than reasonable, given the weight of her ceremonial and constitutional duties. However, the cousins had taken it badly. Albert replied in a huff that he and his brother could not see their way to leaving Coburg before October the 3rd. Thereupon, the princes crept north through Germany, lingered at the court of their uncle King Leopold in Brussels, and dallied again at the Belgian coast, waiting in vain for a calm day to embark. Victoria knew that for her male Coburg relatives, Calais and Dover might just as well be called Scylla and Charybdis, but she had little sympathy with their dread of the sea. She herself was hardly ever sick. On finally receiving word from Uncle Leopold that Albert and Ernest were taking the overnight packet boat from Ostend, Victoria at once dispatched equerries to meet the princes at the Tower of London and bring them to Windsor post-haste. Such considerate arrangements made their lateness all the more unaccountable. It was now after 7 in the evening. The Coburg party still had not been spotted heading up to Windsor Castle, and the Queen was hungry. Victoria was trying to lose weight. At £125, she was heavy for a tiny, small-boned young woman, and she was not feeling her best. Over a stressful summer, her complexion had lost its glow, and an ugly sty broke out on her eye. Her dressers were kept busy letting out the new gown sent over from Paris by Victoria's elegant French aunt, Queen Louise of the Belgians. The royal doctors were recommending that Her Majesty limit lunch to a light broth, while Prime Minister Lord Melbourne urged the Queen to take more exercise. Such advice made the Queen testy with maids and ministers alike. Always ready to get out for a good brisk canter on one of her beloved horses, Victoria hated to walk. Pebbles kept getting into her shoes, she complained. As for food, her appetite reminded old men at court of her uncle King George IV, a legendary trencherman of vast girth. The Queen could put away 3 plates of soup before tucking into her regular menu of fish, fowl and meat dishes, vegetables, fruits, pies, cakes, jellies, nuts and ices. In 1836, when the Duc de Nemours, the tall, dainty second son of the French King Louis-Philippe, came to Windsor with an eye to marrying the then Princess Victoria, he was shocked at the way she lit into her lamb chops. Nemours made a rapid exit, and Victoria did not regret him. Nemours was only one of the royal gentlemen who had recently come to England to woo its queen. At 20, Victoria had seen a great many suitors. Given her druthers, she would probably have married one of the many young English aristocrats who danced attendance on her at court. Some, like Lord Elphinstone and Lord Alfred Paget, were handsome. Many could trace their ancestry back to the Norman conquest. Some were so rich they could have bought the Duchy of Coburg out of pocket change. But unfortunately, Not one of these delightful young Englishmen was eligible. English political tradition had long decreed that no monarch could marry a subject. At 20, Victoria was almost on the shelf, and conscious of it. Most princesses of her time were married off as soon as they reached puberty. She herself had been officially entered in the royal marriage market at the age of 15, when her confirmation was celebrated. If her maternal and paternal relations had not been at daggers drawn over the choice of a bridegroom for her, she might well have married in her mid-teens, while still merely the heir presumptive to the English throne. William IV, Victoria's paternal uncle, who succeeded his brother George IV to the throne in 1830, was elderly, obese, and afflicted with gout, asthma, and congestive heart failure. He knew he had not long to live, and was anxious to see his niece and heir safely married to a man of his choice. The king was determined that man would not be a Coburg. He distrusted the ambitions of the Coburg family, which, in the German social hierarchy, was far inferior to his own Guelph-Brunswick-Hanover line. In Leopold, the King of Belgium, the most redoubtable of the Coburgs, William saw only the jumped-up ruler of a silly, fake nation. As for his Coburg sister-in-law, the Duchess of Kent, Victoria's mother, William IV positively loathed her. William IV's preferred candidate for Victoria's husband was her first cousin, George Cumberland, the son of the king's brother, the Duke of Cumberland. This youth would have been a popular as well as royal choice. One English newspaper was already touting the marriage when the prospective bride and groom were 9 years old. The Duke of Cumberland was heir presumptive to the Guelph family's hereditary German domain of Hanover, just as Victoria was heir presumptive to the Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland. Married, Victoria Kent and her cousin George Cumberland could, in the fullness of time, reunite the kingdoms. But George Cumberland, though handsome and engaging, was born with sight in only one eye, and when he was 14, an accident with a swinging curtain pull destroyed his good eye. Given the risk of hereditary blindness, as well as the difficulties of public life for a blind man, George Cumberland was ruled out as a suitor for Victoria Kent. However, William IV had another nephew called George, the son of his youngest brother, the Duke of Cambridge. George Cambridge led Victoria Kent out to the dance at the few state occasions her mother allowed her to attend. He was a tall, strong young man who seemed to promise well as a sire of kings. He, or his mother, was assiduous in sending gifts and expressions of affection when Victoria celebrated her birthday. But once his parents pressured him to go a-wooing at Windsor, George Cambridge took off for Gibraltar, supposedly on military service, and remained abroad. Young Cambridge had a distressing case of acne, but he prided himself on being a connoisseur of female flesh. He did not fancy his cousin Vic, as he was known to refer to the heir presumptive. She was short, she was plain, and she showed signs of wanting her own way. Disappointed in his nephews, King William IV then brought over the sons of the Prince of Orange from the Netherlands, a Protestant kingdom with dynastic links to England. Unfortunately, they were ugly, awkward and glum, and Victoria was barely civil to them. At last, in desperation, the king trotted out his notorious German cousin, the Duke of Brunswick, as a possible suitor. That gentleman in his time had certainly charmed enough women, to say nothing of men, and Victoria seemed rather fascinated by him. But her mother was not, so that was that. William also sounded out the heir to the throne of Prussia, Frederick William Hohenzollern, another Protestant prince. Through the English minister in Berlin, this prince explained that men of his family did not undertake matrimonial scouting expeditions. He would deign to cross the English Channel only upon a written assurance that the Princess Victoria would marry him. On this prince, Victoria and her mamma were, for once, entirely in agreement. Their answer was a diplomatically expressed, unequivocal, unexpected, and bitterly resented no. And so it came about that in the fall of 1839, by elimination, the chief contender for...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?